Good evening. You're listening to Three No CBs Ahead, the bonus podcast Chimera, where we talk about the latest news on Europa Universalis 5, which Paradox still insists on calling Project Caesar for some reason. I'm Len, I'm your host.
Part of that one post, which Johan replied to, like, this week. Where he was like, yeah. Hey, will trade be like monodirectional in EU5? It was like, no, it won't. Not in EU5, it won't.
Isn't so much of that.
Sometimes he remembers to include the word Project Caesar in his post, and sometimes he doesn't. anyway, I'm Lynn. I'm your host. I'm here with Lambert.
Hello there.
And Father Loris.
Hello.
And I was worried that, okay, so the first episode of this was really long because, you know, it's we can talk about the start date and there's all this, you know, all these comments and just our excitement in general and catching up and complaining about Victoria 3. But probably after that, it's going to level off, right? Well,
no,
folks. When I was putting together just Johan's relevant forum responses, it took me 12 hours just from where we left off last time, so that's what your Patreon dollars are going to if you're listening to the extended version, which of course will be on Patreon. Those of you who are joining us for the shortened, the appended free version, free preview, thank you. We appreciate your support as well. Yeah, that's what the Patreon money is going to, is allowing me to spend 12
paid, hours. Paid labor. That's what it
is. For Johan's forum posts. And
poor Liana down in the fucking Paradox forum mines.
The forum mines, trying to edit, like, arguments between a Swedish programmer and people who have maybe not the greatest ability to express their thoughts. going back and forth over the minutia of game mechanics that I haven't actually touched yet, which can be hard to wrangle that into something that's actually comprehensible. We have four more dev diaries and then the Johan files, but then also they announced they're going to start doing separate, like, map diaries on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Absolutely blessed.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's blessed, but it also means that, like, we might hit a point where we have 8 dev diaries. Like, we might have to start doing this bi-monthly if there's that much going on. I never thought we'd be in a position where one game would take up, you know, that
one
much time.
One game is, like, nowhere near release, too, we should say.
And a officially unannounced game.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think there's going to be plenty of Project Caesar / EU5 stuff to talk about going forward. We'll start with Tinto Talks 5, which was from March 27th, which he announces as our upcoming top secret game with the codename Project Caesar.
Top secret. No one's ever heard of this.
Which, first time I read, I literally burst out laughing. Like, it was the most... genuinely funny. Like,
he must have a massive grin on his face every time he writes that. It's part of the joke.
Oh, by the way, the last time we recorded, 1337 had not been announced as officially as the start date yet. And, like, the day after that, as I was, like, uploading the show to the CMS, he posted and confirmed that it was 1337. So we called it. You're welcome. The step diary also has a very much more detailed political map of the Balkans and Anatolia than the one we were working from previously, that very much confirms that this is 1337.
I quite liked it because it was like you know, there was like maybe a day or two of people like speculating and then just sweeping in and just going, well, stop speculating.
Yeah.
Here it is. Now talk about it a bit more. It's good.
Talk
like
about
it.
Something more relevant. This is a settled issue.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's good. It's really
you can
good.
Argue with me about what control means now, since you don't have to speculate about this.
Oh, no. When this came out, there was then a conversation about what a certain country should be called. On the map that was shown in Tinto Talk 5, it says Byzantine Empire. Mm. And that has a few people, including myself, don't quite like that name for various reasons. We prefer things like either Eastern Roman Empire. My personal favorite is Empire of the Romans. And so then there was a further post where it was decided that there was going to be pre-game options where you get to choose the name of that specific state, that state only, which then spawned what is currently the longest thread on the forums, like 40 pages of arguments, whining, bitching at people, pretending that they're lunatics and Roma booze and psychoanalysis.
Because I just thought that was a settled issue now. Like, there's two options. Bam.
Yeah.
Well, it is. They made it a game rule. I mean, you know how much I hate Rome, and I still think the correct name for that state is the Eastern Roman Empire. I think it's clearly the correct name. So I'm not a Roma boo. You can't use that argument with me.
But why?
I just think it's the correct name.
Are people actually, I haven't followed that thread, but like, are people genuinely complaining that you get an option to call it like whatever you want?
Why? Yes.
Why?
The early parts of that thread were, now you've done it. You've thrown them a bone. They'll never shut up now. And then it turned into whining and a couple of people, I'm not going to name them, but there was denialism, pretending that the Empire of the Romans, Eastern Roman Empire, whatever, was not actually Roman, which is delusional. And also just this back and forth, like psychoanalysis, strawmanning, ignoring every single comment, just so much arguing for 43 pages. It's
well, here's the thing to everybody who doesn't believe that the Eastern Roman Empire was really Rome and wants to argue with people who believe that. I'm lighting a big torch over here that says the Ottomans were the third Rome, so you can come fight me instead. Leave them alone.
Hey, I will team up. I'll team up with these people.
Opinion for you. So like I'm on an even more radical what counts as the Roman Empire path.
Oh, this it's hateful.
Yeah.
Rome died in 1453. Come at me.
I don't think Russia or Germany were the Roman Empire, though.
No. Nor
the United States is the United States is cosplaying as the Roman Empire to some extent.
I think every empire did, like Napoleon.
So the eagle is obviously from Rome, but like that. What's Russia's current like state flag? Not like their national flag. Their state one is also the eagle. Serbia also has it. They're all LARPing as you know Roman successors.
Yeah, I mean like the Victorians love to do this too, you know. But which is great because you get loads of like marble statues of Victorians dressed as Romans, except they've got like Victorian facial hair. So it's like somebody dressed up as like as Julius Caesar with like the most ridiculous sideburns you'll ever see. Like, great.
Well, see, I think I win more friends because I don't think a lot of like Greek people today care that much about the Roman Empire. But when I say the Ottomans were the third Rome, every single Turkish person in the chat is going to be like based. So, anyway.
There is a YouTube. There is a forum user who does like mention the Ottomans every 2 seconds. Who's Turkish?
I know. What are you talking about? That's very funny.
I was like, I I first thought it was quite annoying, and now it's becoming a bit endearing. It's like this person really likes his turkey.
Have you seen their signature as well is Ottomanist supremacist or something along those lines?
Maybe. It sounds about right. Can I just say, like, I'm completely ambivalent about the name, but what I like to see now is a fucking return of good comedy writing. Like, CK3, bless him, it's a good game. I don't think the events are, but you're trying to be funny, are very funny. Victoria Free's the same. But the description for when you're changing its Eastern Roman Empire is so dripping with such sarcasm and snark. It's really... Yeah. Genuinely really funny, and you know, it's great. I like it. I'm so happy comedy has returned. Good comedy.
Yeah, I think the phrasing he used was the choose the name of the
Greek country centered around Byzantium will be known as the Eastern Roman Empire, even though they're about 1,000 Roman miles away from Rome. It's great.
Wait, listen, did you see Thor 3? Asgard is a people, not a place.
I have buried those memories. I wish to not have them returned. That there was a great second Thor movie, and they really need to get on and make the third.
I think Ragnarok was the third one. I think you literally have blocked out Dark World, which was the second one.
I totally am.
You literally did the thing you were joking about.
Oh no. Oh my gosh. Right. Okay. No, fair enough.
All right. Well, let's talk about some dev diaries. this first dev diary introduces the concept of how estates are going to work in EU5. We have the crown, the nobility, the clergy, the burghers, and the commoners. That's going to be all of them. There's no more spoiler alert. They already changed their mind and are adding more estates.
Yeah.
Due to feedback since the dev diary was released.
Yeah.
Their power comes from wealth and population. It's kind of a weird, flat, non-dynamic value. Like, one noble is worth 1,000 peasants power-wise. I would maybe like to see something where that calculation can change.
I think there's probably modifiers would fall.
Yeah, some kind of laws to empower the peasants might, you know, that might be a thing that happens, or, you know, I've enacted a policy that will reduce my noble's power. I can see that being a case, but just a baseline, the numbers seem reasonably fine. But yeah, I think there will be further reduced by, or increased by modifiers later on.
Mm-hmm. And then the power of all the estates and the crown will always add up to 100. So like, this was something that caused confusion, and I was going to go over when we got to the forum posts. But like, the percentage power within your country of any estate is normalized to like fit within that 100%. So like, yeah, if it's plus 20. Power to the commoners, that's not seizing 20% of the total power in the nation from the crown and giving it to the commoners. It's multiplying whatever value the commoners have currently by 1.2, and then it recalculates the whole nation's power distribution that way.
Which makes sense, like, if we're making the assumption that those disasters, like, you know, nobility takeover or burghers takeover or whatever, it's not a thing. And it's just tied directly into the estates, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fine. I think that's good.
It kind of sounds like a combination of estates from EU4 and kind of interest groups from Vicky 3 a little bit, maybe. They can act independently. They can fund things. Although one other answer Johan gave specified that the player will initiate all construction, but like, maybe if you're building a market town, like the burghers will help you pay for it potentially.
It's fine. I don't really need complete autonomous things in EU5. No. Needed it in Vicky Free. I don't need it in EU5.
Fine. Yeah, I feel like, you know, that concept that comes up with every game, like, what is the player playing as? In CK, you're playing as the dynasty. In EU4, you're playing as the spirit of the nation. The estates exist within the spirit of the nation, so you are playing the estates as well. You are not playing as the crown. You're playing as the estates and the crown and the entire process. So I feel like the player having control over what the estates are building is also just fine.
Yeah, we'll get into this a lot more later with some of the response, the forum posts and stuff. But EU4 is a more abstract game than Victoria is, and I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Obviously, EU5 is looking like it's considerably less abstracted than EU4 was, but I think you kind of have to compare apples to apples. I don't know. I have a whole speech about this for later, but every estate is going to have levies as well, which are not just drawn from the commoners. They're also drawn from the other estates. And because your starting army at the beginning is going to be kind of pathetic, Johan described it as almost like a palace guard for most countries. It's going to be maybe like a couple hundred soldiers. Almost all of your armies at the beginning of the game are going to be levies. But importantly, you do not pay upkeep for those. The estates do. Oh, but you have to keep them. You have to keep them happy or they will not provide you with levies.
Right.
So
the commoners are going to rock up with a peasant levy with pitchforks. The nobility are going to rock up with, you know, knights on horseback because, you know, they're nobles. They can afford their own stuff. The burghers are going to rock up and be like, I paid this guy to come fight for me. And the clergy is going to rock up and be like, "Wallalo."
It was funny how, like, in the Catholic world, they came up with, like, loopholes for the clergy to be able to. That's why clerics use maces in D&D. If you're not spilling any blood, it's like, well, I knocked him out. I don't know if he's dead. I mean, I wasn't trying to kill him.
I'm going to remove his helmet because if I remove his helmet and he is bleeding from his ears and nose, then I've sinned. But if I don't know that, it's fine.
I didn't mean to hit him. Forgive me, Father. I didn't mean to hit him that hard. I just wanted to give him his bell a good ring so he'd stop fighting.
I didn't make him bleed. His bone sticking out of his skin made him bleed.
There's a lot we don't know about warfare yet, but overall I really like how they've structured this transition from like levies to professional armies. It sounds like
it's a lot better than army professionalism was, which felt
right. And like the fact that the estates are actually paying the upkeep for the levies, I think is way more interesting than, like, I don't know, early game EU4 can just get so silly. Like, in so many ways, it can get silly. Like, for one thing, I mean, he's confirmed that regiments can be groups of 100 now, not just 1,000, which just makes large portions of the world now playable. Like the Eastern Woodlands in North America, it was always so ridiculous that the Iroquois would have like a 13,000 man standing army by 1500. The largest North American native army that we know of was maybe like 1500 fighters total. Are like the current estimates, and that was like multiple tribes coming together. Like EU4 just doesn't have the granularity to do that, which is why as much as they tried, they could never get North America right. It was either always they're too weak or no European colony is ever successful because somehow there's like a 40,000 man federation army from multiple tribes that's, you know, shutting everything down. But and yeah, just the fact that like it's not going to be this constant drain on your treasury like in early game EU4, where like you have to decide between having an army and having a budget, which is not really something that a medieval ruler would care about so much. It would have an impact that when you call them up, they are not contributing to the economy, which Johan also said that is sort of what the actual cost of levies is when you raise your levies.
Yeah, they're not opportunity cost.
Yeah, so
yeah, you know, picking your crops, which could be actually pretty bad.
Sorry, I keep having to clear my throat because I just right when we started recording, I started feeling like congested for some reason. Yeah, nobility impacts prestige and counter espionage. You always have you got to keep an eye on those nobles. You know, cooperating with foreign powers.
I'm going to make a prediction that I'm not going to give a shit about counter espionage. Like
well, like there's that event in EU4 that's like the foolish relative event, and I'm always like, yeah, whatever. He is a relative after all. Like I don't care.
Yeah, or it's like a shady offer. It's like, oh, great, 15%. You know, greater spy. It's like, oh, I'll just take prestige every time.
Offer we can refuse. Actually, 5 prestige is way more valuable than it.
Yeah,
there's one exception. Yeah. And that is when you have a colony, there are some events that give the colony like 200% spy network speed. So you're basically getting like 5 to 10 spy network per month, which can come in very handy if that colony is a player.
Yeah, maybe. That's a niche one. Yeah,
that's true.
I mean,
it's definitely niche.
It's like when you forget to fabricate a claim and your truce is timing out, and then you get that event. It's like, okay, I'll use this one event this one time because I'm incompetent. I forgot to plan.
The clergy impact your research speed and your diplomatic reputation. All pops are apparently going to contribute to research speed, but clergy, I guess, are more.
Impactful,
that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, makes sense.
Which makes me wonder if they're going to do something similar to like what Vic 3 does, where like countries that don't really have like academic clergy will get like Confucian scholars or something.
Well, I would say like it's I don't see it as like the clergy themselves doing the research, but like, you know, patrons of, because that's how most Renaissance art and stuff occurred, right? It was normally church patronage. And that was true most places of the world. Like, you know, Islamic scholars would fund Islamic art, like that. And that's what research is in this time period, right? And, you know, it's not like the Victorian period where somebody's invented like standardized spanners or something really useful. It's like research was like hey,
I thought in the Victorian period you built lots and lots of art academies that just turn out paintings and only extremely rich people can afford them. I would like actually, to see
you just built the universities that everyone knows in the Victorian period. Yeah. It was academia that fucking researched all the most useful things. Bessemer process, you know, somebody came up with that in a lab.
But I would like to see like some like localized effects for certain estates, maybe later on with DLC, like China and Japan. I don't know if it makes as much sense for like the clergy to be the ones who are impacting your research speed, unless they end up, you know, calling themselves. Like there weren't Buddhist monks that were like developing new steelworking techniques in feudal Japan and stuff like that.
Yeah, the literati, Confucian scholars.
I feel like with military advancement specifically, it's more a case of we need to look, my lord, I've come up with a new helmet design. This is going to protect your soldiers, and then that in every different regard, and just gets iterated on again and again and again. We've built this new ship and it turns out it's actually way better. Why is it way better? This is why. And okay, we'll do this and this and try and, you know, come up with new designs. But it's not a case of, you know, sitting down at the drawing board and be like, if I make this way, we're going to get an extra 20% speed. It's all iterative is what I'm trying to say, really.
Right. There are going to be estate privileges as well. One they show is free mobility for peasants, which gives plus 10 happiness or approval, I think it's called. And plus 20% power to the peasants, moves you from serfdom toward free subjects at a steady rate, allows peasants to migrate. That's pretty significant because in a lot of places in Europe, that was not allowed. And it makes the nobles mad. Estate privileges, this is also from the Johann files, but he responded to a comment saying that it won't be like EU4 where almost everybody just starts out with a blank slate of estate privileges. They will usually start with a historical spread of estate privileges, which could be an interesting way to model things like, I don't know, the Polish, is it Sejm? I'm not actually sure how to pronounce it.
Sejm.
No. Yeah,
the Polish shame.
So you could have those kinds of things modeled as like starting estate privileges potentially. Yeah.
They have started doing that a little bit with EU4, specifically thinking of Byzantium having just horrific estates.
Yeah.
But it's usually tied to some kind of disaster.
Yeah. And then I don't know if it was in this dev diary or a later dev diary, but they talked about how you won't actually collect taxes from pops. You will, the estates will collect the profits of buildings and RGOs, which we haven't heard that much about how buildings and RGOs work yet. And then you will tax the estates using your sliders, which there's some other response. There was a very long thread about sliders.
You don't like sliders much, right, Nana?
I don't like having, like they said, the sliders in EU5 are going to have, or Project Caesar, I don't want to misquote anyone and get them in trouble with their boss. They said that it's going to be 0.1% in increments, so like 1,000 possible positions on the slider. Though that's obviously limited by your estate privileges. Like starting out, Catholics can't tax the church at all. And I think it caps out at 20 for nobles to start, at least for the countries they were showing us. That level of fine grained control just kind of drives me a little bit insane. Like I would rather have like 10 or have it go up by like plus or minus 5%. But Johann did make a point about how like sliders actually are easier for the AI to use.
So that, which I hadn't really like, thought about, but it doesn't make sense, I would have thought.
Yeah, things that make the AI better and things that make performance better, I think I would prioritize fairly highly overall, just because those are things in grand strategy games that tend to fall apart and catch on fire.
Yeah. Like,
if it's going to be anything, it's going to be the AI or it's going to be performance. So
we have a tendency here to throw sly little digs at Victoria 3, but it's a tendency. I mean, it's a tendency. But I'm just thinking about this slider system and comparing it to an equivalent in Victoria 3.
Yeah.
And where Victoria 3, you have low taxes, medium taxes, and high taxes.
Yeah.
In Project Caesar EU5, we're going to have increments of 0.01. So basically, that means for Victoria 3's three buttons, EU5 is going to have 1,000.
Essentially, what a slider is, right?
Technically, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
A slider is effectively 1,000 buttons.
It's
just like a mental thing for me where like I'm like, oh, but do I need to tweak this by 0.1% or like do I have it exactly perfect?
See, I'm in the same boat. I love that. I mean, I do go like in Vicky 2, I go into my sliders and really play around for minutia, but I enjoy doing it. So it's like,
People who don't, there is an option to let the AI deal with your sliders for you.
No, I don't trust.
I don't trust that either. But like, I can't imagine that it's going to be such a drain on your time unless you are one of those people who is like, I can't leave this slider at 39.9%. It has to get to the round number. Like, if that's you, and I am that person, it's going to be a little bit annoying. But at the same time, maybe it's just you'll be able to just, you know, click the arrow on the side of it to go up that, you know, the breakpoints, I guess. Yeah.
Well, and maybe it'll end up being that just like it ends up being optimal to just tax your nobles as much as the privileges allow you to tax them.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about the English Civil War on the last episode and how so much of that was about like what is the king actually allowed to tax? Like, you know, and needing money to run the country. So I would love that to be modeled somehow, that interplay with, like, you know, and not just in terms of I'm moving the tax slider up and down and it's turning a giant dial that says tax and looking back at the audience to see their reaction.
That's kind of how it worked, though, like when we were calling parliaments. It was like, how much have I taxed?
Yeah, but like the fact that like you actually had to call parliament and have them vote you those taxes. I want there to be something like that where it's like a conversation with your estates. It's not just a slider.
Yeah.
But that could be based on it's not the tax slider itself. It's how high you're allowed to put the tax slider. There's different ways.
Yeah, I think that's the best way of doing it. Yeah. I wouldn't want a situation where you say you could only change your tax when on a state, because then you're locked in for X number of years when, and maybe you just fucked up the sliders, which, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Then this is the dev diary that made me pog all over the place. is the dev diary numbers.
Lambert's had a power cut.
Nope.
Okay. Well, okay.
Maybe we should just finish the episode really fast.
That's fine. We could just mark it here and then continue it tomorrow.
Do you want? Okay. Maybe we should just continue next time. Maybe that's just a good time to wrap it up.
That's good. It's a bit abrupt. Finland is called cut on this podcast.
It's fine. It's we're gonna be like at exactly like 4 hours anyway. So I'm just gonna call it. I'm gonna call it there. We will discuss the rest of the Johan files next time. I'm actually gonna make a little note here on my Google Doc. Lawrence, where can people find Lambert? Where is he?
I don't know. He's like in a void in Finland. I think now he's power.
Lord Lambert on YouTube and he's Lambert 291.
That's right. That's right. When he's got power, he's Lord Lambert on Twitch and YouTube. And they're both very good. I highly recommend. And he's got some really good interviews with like the Ambanar devs out.
Yeah.
But I highly recommend. Really, really interesting stuff, including one coming up with somebody working on the Victoria 3 mod for. I think will be a good interview with Lambert. It'd be certainly entertaining.
He also has some videos about these dev diaries that maybe cover a couple things we didn't. I think I want to try to get Jay on for what's the month that comes after May? June?
Yeah. Well, I'll ask him if he's under any NDAs, I think.
Because next month I think I might want to get Brett Devereaux back to talk about the economy.
Sounds like a good plan. And I don't know
if he'll be able to join us for 4 hours, but he might be able to show up for like an hour or two.
I've got like one question for like Ambanar devs. It's like, do you want to continue on Victoria 3 or do you just want to port over at this point? Because I think a lot of these mechanics suit the Victorian era really well, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Loris, where can people find you?
No, me. Yeah. Chapelcomic.com is my website. Uh-huh. And Father Loris on Twitter and Reddit is a place. And yourself, Liana?
Yeah, Three Moves Ahead is hosted on the Idle Thumbs Network. You can find us there at idlethumbs.net/3MA. We're also supported by our patrons at patreon.com/3MA. If you're listening again to the 4-hour extended Patreon cut, we appreciate your support. And if not, and if for some reason you want to hear us talk, if you're listening to the free version and you want to hear us talk for 4 hours about a game that doesn't exist yet, you can go over for $5 and subscribe and do that and somewhat justify the amount of time that I spent going over Johan's forum posts. What else? I'm Till Folkvang on Twitter. I'm just Len on Blue Sky. It's easier to find me there because I got there early enough that I got a 3-letter username. And we'll be back soon with another episode of Three Moves Ahead, and we'll be back next month with another EU5 bonus cast. Maybe we'll get to see some more maps, and we'll finish going over the parts of the Johan files that we didn't get to this time, and the inevitable probably like 12 more pages that he will produce between now and then. If you just want to make my life harder, just go argue with Johan on the forums as much as possible.
Ask some really inspiring questions, like we've had this. Like, will there be countries in the game? Yes.
Ask some really obvious questions, and then keep replying to get him to clarify because you didn't understand his answer to your really obvious question. That's it. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Ta-ra.